Good morning, everyone. We're about ready to start. I will be both your moderator and your first speaker. So that's only a little awkward. So my introduction's all up on the first slide, and I'm not going to repeat it, except to say thank you to all my co-authors. We have just about half a minute left. There's seats up front. There's some seats over here if you want. Okay, I'm going to get started now. And I'll be talking today on the strengthening of the science of soil health through standardized indicator methods. And we're talking laboratory methods here. The talk following mine will discuss in-field methods. And I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, Jennifer Moore-Cajera, Brandon Smith, Bianca Mobius-Kloon, who's not here, Veronica Casa-Martinez, she's also in the audience, and Alan Franz-Lubers. So we have, it's an effort to strengthen the science of soil health. And why is NRCS involved in this? Well, we want science to be the basis of our recommendations of soil health management systems when we recommend this to producers and farmers. And you can see here there's five components to this effort. It's agency-wide, and it's leveraging our many partners and collaborators outside of the NRCS. And the one component I'm going to speak to today is evaluating existing literature on indicators and their interpretation and soil health management system implementation. So the overall goals for this effort is to advance our soil and climate-based interpretations of measures of soil health, so that we were able to recommend soil health management approaches that are science-based, quantify and communicate the agronomic, the environmental, and the economic outcomes that can be achieved with these management systems, with changes that we're asking farmers and ranchers to implement. And we want to integrate this information into our tools for conservation planning, and there's a broad nationwide adoption of soil health management systems. And added to this, it's also implementing this information into our training efforts. Of the piece I'm talking to about today, the measurement and standard goals, goal is to identify those indicators that are important for assessing soil health, identify and target the very specific soil resource concerns related to soil health, to use it for regional and national soil inventories. So we want to identify those methods for those soil health indicators, ensure methods that are being used are the best available now. Not necessarily, in the future we may slip a better one in and take an old one out. So these aren't set in concrete. They're recommendations. NRCS cannot mandate others outside the agency to use these methods, but we're hoping people will use it as a core set so that we can begin to understand trends and potentials in a variety of different soil types. And unless we're all sharing a common core of methods, it's very hard to compare across projects or experiments. And again, if something better comes along, hallelujah. So we want to ensure that this particular core set of methods is appropriate for use in soil test laboratories. So these aren't designed for the research lab. although we're hoping some of the research labs use them. But they're in for the soil test laboratories to facilitate these indicators for conservation planning. And, you know, as I've talked before, we're developing a process for method replacement, you know, out with the old and in with the new when the time comes. So where did we, you know, about 3 years ago, we began with 6 multi-organizational meetings. The first ones were under the umbrella of the Soil Renaissance, which were funded by Noble Foundation and Farm Foundation, and the last couple were funded by the Soil Health Institute. Participants, there were university people, there were people from soil test labs, there were people from ARS and NRCS, for NGOs. So over time, there's at least been 150 people involved in this activity. And in the first meetings, we settled on primary soil processes and functions that we were interested in for soil health assessment. And we developed criteria for selection. And over the last 3 years, there was a development of straw papers, and from the straw papers, an internal USDA white paper. It was NRCS white paper at this point. We hope by the end of the month it'll be USDA-wide. And in collaborating on this and recommendation of these preferred indicators and methods for biological and physical soil health indicators, chemistry, you know, we pretty much know what's going on there. It's in the biologics and some of the physical. Soil health assessments, what we're looking on is you've got your basic nutrient availability assessments that farmers primarily send in every few years. We're hoping that this is an add-on that will be available. And many laboratories are offering these things right now, but they're also using a variety of different methods, so we're hoping there's some cohesion. So organic matter cycling is in here, and it's not so much because they're already offered in soil test labs, but there are some issues I will talk about a little bit later. Soil structural stability, which is water partitioning, how much infiltrates versus runoff. General microbial activity, the available carbon pool that supports the underground biomass and underground critters, and then bioavailable nitrogen, both for the underground biomass and nitrogen that becomes plant available over the season. And then last is get a concept of microbial community diversity, their structure and diversity. We had a number of criteria we selected. I'm not going to go through all of them, but one of the things that we were particularly interested in is it needed to be relatively easy and inexpensive to sample and measure. Obviously, as with any method, it needs to be repeatable. We didn't want to require a lot of infrastructure or investment in terms of the soil test labs, so we chose ones that were relatively inexpensive. Interpretations are accessible to many users so that we can provide a science-based indicator-informed recommendations for management and how to move into a soil health management system, and how to proceed on that journey toward good soil health. So the indicator tiers, we divided or considered 3 tiers of indicators. The first one is an effective indicator. It's defined regionally, soil groupings across the nation. It has thresholds of at least poor, adequate, or good that are outcome-based, you know, yield or in environment, such as reduced runoff or reduced nitrates. And the management can be suggested to improve the soil functioning from knowing what these indicators are. So keep that in mind. Tier 2, it's an effective indicator we know trends, we know directionality, we have a good idea of potential ranges in some regions, but not nationally. We do not know thresholds for adequate functioning in a healthy soil in various regions. We may know a few regions, but not all of them. And we have some idea of which management practices can change the indicator. And then there's Tier 3. And basically, the Tier 3s are still in the research laboratory realm. They're not ready for the soil test lab. They have a lot of potential, but we don't always know trends yet, and we certainly don't know thresholds. So these are three processes that were not considered by the committees. And that's nutrient availability, because that's been around forever in the soil test labs. And although there's many different extracts, each state, you know, can relate their extract and their like available NPNK or their trace elements back to yield. So, or you know, if we have nutrient runoff, that's known. Reactivity, pH, salinity, sodicity, again, multiple extracts, but relationships are known. Soil organic matter cycling is critically important. We consider Tier 1s, the soil organic carbon by dry combustion. Many soil test labs still use loss on ignition, and there are a lot of problems with that method. It's unreliable. It has to be very small, regionally set up regressions, because you can't just do one regression and use that across the country. That requires small... linear functions. But the dry combustion is a fairly expensive machine. You know, as scientific instruments go, it's fairly cheap, but still, you have to be a large laboratory to be able to invest in this. The smaller labs can't, and they'll continue to use loss in it with ignition, and we hope to help inform and get them to do more regressions across the regions that they serve. Macroaggregation, been around a long time, very important for soil structural stability, potential for erosion, to partition that water. Good soil structure allows more water to go in rather than to run off. We recommend the Kemper and Rosnell method. That's the Yoder machine, the sieving machine. And we have a preferred method that USDA has used in all their cross-location projects. And it's written down, and it will be available in the white paper once that white paper goes on a website. There's alternate methods, the NRCS, Kellogg Soil Survey Lab method. And they do a pre-soak. And so the reason that we don't recommend that is what we're trying to see is how stable that aggregate is. If it gets wetted up quickly on a rainstorm, so when it's at its most vulnerable. And their method is more appropriate because they're doing a lot of soil classification, and they have very strong reasons for using their pre-soak, and that's okay. CASH is the Cornell's Comprehensive Assessment of Soil Health, and they use a sprinkle infiltrometer, and it does separate treatments and sites, but it's only been used in the Northwest or the Northeast, so we consider that a tier two maybe. Short-term carbon utilization, that's been around a long time. 4-day incubation, which a lot of people are used to the one-day incubation, or they call it respiration. It's not really a short-term carbon utilization. But the 24-hour one is highly variable, and it takes 3 to 4 days for this method to settle down and be very repeatable and have the precision necessary. General microbial activity, there's four enzymes here that we're recommending. It's a suite of enzymes. We considered others, but they're still tier three. I'm not going to go through them individually. You can see the methods up here. Note that Veronica Casa Martinez, who is one of the co-authors, is trying to develop a metabolic index. It's in a way that you can measure several enzyme reactivities on a single sample, which would greatly simplify this procedure. And hopefully we can replace this suite with that index here in, you know, 2 or 3 years. So Veronica, keep working on it. Active carbon, bioavailable carbon. The preferred method right now is permanganate oxidizable carbon. You can see the methodologies there. We considered several others. And they're there. For better or for worse, we chose the permanganate oxidizable carbon until a better one comes along. Organic nitrogen, we're looking at soil proteins. This may still be tier two, we might be bordering on tier three, but it was the best available. The others were often taken out because they're too short or they're too long. They take too much time. Microbial diversity, community structure, we're looking at PLFA. Other methods are still in the research realm. So key outcomes, standardized soil health measures that can facilitate nationwide sharing, actionable, easily understood results, and integration of acquired findings into agency policy, program offerings, tools, and priorities. So I think I'm out of time and I don't have time for questions. There is opportunity to collaborate, so you can see me at the end if you're interested.